Sidelines, a UN human rights investigator, says Israeli settlements in the West Bank amount to a war crime, stressing that Israel's illegal occupation cannot be cost-free. The Taliban claim they are now in control of 85% of Afghanistan's territory amid the militant group's nationwide offensive. And a Ukrainian soldier is killed and another wounded in fresh clashes with pro-Russia forces in the country's war-torn east. Hello and welcome, everybody. UN Human Rights Investigator says Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank amount to a war crime. Michael Link said Israel is defying international law and international opinion. He is the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the occupied Palestinian territories. Link called on the international community to make it clear to Israel that its, quote, illegal occupation cannot be cost-free. He made the comments in an address to a session of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. More than 600,000 Israelis live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Al-Quds, Israel has recently stepped up its settlement activities, backed by the United States, and in defiance of UN Security Council Resolution 2334, all Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society says over 80 Palestinians have been injured after Israeli forces attacked anti-settlement protesters near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. The clashes erupted on Mount Sabi in the town of Beita, where people took to the streets against an illegal Eviatar settlement outpost, demanding its removal. The outpost has become one of the focal points of recent clashes between settlers backed by regime forces and the Palestinians. Several Palestinians have been killed and dozens wounded in the violence over the past several weeks. The Israeli authorities decided to remove the Eviatar settlement to turn it into a military base pending a new decision. However, the Beita town residents rejected the decision and pledged to continue their protests until the outpost is removed. What is seen as a worst economic crisis in Lebanon could spiral into civil unrest. People are frustrated with the prices and lack of goods while politicians remain in a cycle of disagreement. Mariam Saleh reports from Beirut.
Near Beirut International Airport, the first thing that one would notice is the long queues of cars, which begin from the early hours of the morning. Police try to assist the station workers in organizing the lineup of all types of vehicles, which come to one of the few gas stations in Beirut which allow them to fill their tanks completely. People here are already fed up.
It doesn't get worse than this. I have a cab. I need to fill gas. I've been going around the entire city trying to find gas. I won't even mention the lack of medicine and food.
We are going to hell. They are humiliating us and leaving us with nothing. It is the politicians who are dependent on the West. They and the West are destroying this country.
Member of the gas station owner's syndicate.
The story of the fuel crisis begins with the governor of the central bank. If there is money, then he will allot funds. If he wants to humiliate people, then he uses his bureaucratic procrastination. While in such an economic crisis, they can work on providing the necessary funds in one day instead of 6, 7, or 9 days. One day of delay will cause delay in distribution.
Others believe there should be free commerce when it comes to importing fuel, and allowing anyone in Lebanon to import fuel and break the cartel's monopoly. The latest crisis does not stop there. Mohammed Qasim was a public high school teacher for some 40 years. Today, his pension is worth only 10% what it used to be.
I used to have $2,000 to $2,500 per month. Now I'm gaining only $200. So how can it manage? This is one thing. $200 with what? Inflation, no food, no electricity, no fuel. Money is spent all over things other than social welfare. The government is not caring for people who are of low wages.
With so many unanswered questions and a complex socio-political and economic crisis, Experts warn a possible Western intervention could worsen the situation.
Now they are trying to use the needs of the Lebanese in order to attract their emotions and passion towards these interventions. But I think this will not go on. None will accept that, and those who will accept that will pay for that nationally, and later will discover that he was making a betrayal to the country and to the history of the resistance that had liberated Lebanon.
Observers see prospects of civil unrest ahead, especially in light of the state's incapability of dealing with basic issues and the lack of agreement on a new cabinet. The Lebanese people have reached a state of anger and frustration, lining up for hours to fill their gas tanks. At times, this anger spills into fistfights and shootings. These incidents warn of the possibility of unrest and, as the caretaker prime minister put it, social explosion. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Taliban say they've seized Afghanistan's key border crossing with its northern neighbor, Turkmenistan, amid a blistering offensive by the militant group. A Taliban spokesman said the Targhandi border port had been fully captured. Afghanistan's interior ministry said security forces at the port had been, quote, temporarily relocated. It added that efforts are underway to recapture the crossing. Russia also says the militant group controls more than two-thirds of the Tajik border. In the northeast, moreover, the Taliban captured Afghanistan's main conduit for trade with Iran in the west. The Taliban claim to be in control of 85% of Afghanistan. Now, Afghan authorities have dismissed that figure and vowed to retake all the districts lost to the militants. The U.S. says that it will complete its withdrawal from Afghanistan by August the 31st after invading the country 20 years ago. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaks about the full withdrawal of British military forces from Afghanistan after almost 20 years of presence in the country under the pretext of war on terror. Johnson says Afghanistan's neighboring countries can help Afghans build their future. I mean, all of me reports.
Highlighting the low capability of NATO troops to bring calm to Afghanistan, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson recently has said that NATO must be realistic about the issue. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson also said it would take combined efforts of many nations, including Afghanistan's neighbors, to help the Afghan people to build their future. This comes as the White House recently welcomed Iran's move to host the first round of intra-Afghan talks in Tehran. The recent remarks by the UK Prime Minister highlight an Afghan proverb saying only neighbors remain for each other, not others. Afghan officials have also realized that the best way to bring calm to Afghanistan is to boost the ties between neighboring countries and the entire region.
This is a true illustration of our conviction that Afghanistan is an integral part of Central Asia and that we have common challenges and collective responsibility to work together to address them.
As a matter of fact, most of Afghanistan's neighboring countries have so far played a key role in bringing peace to the war-ravaged country, excluding Pakistan. This is because Afghan officials have always blamed Islamabad for destabilizing Afghanistan by backing terrorism.
Pakistan is not only after the revival of Taliban regime, but it also follows other goals by backing terrorism, including creating border tensions and competing with India in our soil.
A total of 457 British service members have died in Afghanistan since the UK's deployment. The number is a much higher death rate compared to the UK involvement in Iraq. Britain's last combat troop left Afghanistan in October 2014, though about 700 remained in Afghanistan as part of a NATO mission to train Afghan forces. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The European Commission says a unanimous decision would be required by all EU member states in order to add MKO to the bloc's terrorist list. Rights campaigners say the EU is shying away from taking such a move because the terrorist organization has the backing of key allies. Jerome Hughes reports on that.
In 2002, the European Union placed the Mujahideen Khalq organization, MKO, on its list of terrorist groups. However, just 7 years later, in 2009, the MKO was removed from the list. We raised this subject with the bloc's executive arm, the European Commission, during an online press conference. Former members who have escaped this group describe it as a bloodthirsty cult that's involved in torture, forced sterilization, imprisonment, separating children from their parents. So should the EU not add this organization to its terrorist list?
So if the agreement is made among the member states by unanimity, then the entity, organization, or the individual is put on the either terrorist or sanctions list, and then the member states are responsible for enforcing the restrictive measures against this entity or individual.
The MKO is staging its annual conference in Paris, and previously some high-profile names from the US have been involved. The main goal of the terror group is to overthrow Iran's democratically elected government. Over the years, the MKO has killed more than 12,000 Iranian civilians and officials.
United States, they just support any group who can achieve its goals on the region. In the region, even it is the devils itself, they all support it to get to achieve the goals in the region.
MKO headquarters are in Albania. When respected international journalists attempt to access the secretive compound, they are accused of being Iranian government agents. Security experts say the terror group is mainly propped up by the US, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. Efforts by some Western countries and their regional allies to topple the Islamic Republic have been acknowledged by EU lawmakers in the past.
Europe does need to put its arm around Iran and be more welcoming.
We must work for stability in Iran and Iraq and Lebanon, a peace in Syria and Yemen, and oppose the US-Saudi attempts to isolate Iran.
Although the EU as a whole will never put the MKO on its terrorist list due to pressure from the US and others, it's well known that a number of the bloc's nations consider the organization to be a malign entity. Furthermore, because the MKO has such bizarre ideas and restrictions around human reproduction, analysts say it is simply a matter of time before the organization meets its demise. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Ukraine says one of its soldiers has been killed and another wounded in clashes with pro-Russian forces in the country's war-torn east. In a statement, the Ukrainian army said pro-Russian fighters have launched 11 attacks on troops with mortars, grenade launchers, and heavy machine guns over the past 24 hours. The renewed clashes in eastern Ukraine have left the ceasefire brokered last year in tatters. Government forces have been battling with pro-Russian groups in eastern Donetsk and Lugansk regions since 2014, when they declared independence. According to the United Nations, the fighting has claimed more than 13,000 lives ever since. And the UN Security Council has backed African Union mediation efforts between Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan in a dispute over a dam in Ethiopia. The Council urged the parties to resume talks. It said negotiations should be held under the leadership of the African Union and should recommence with urgency. That came after Egypt and Sudan called on the Security Council to help resolve the dispute. Earlier this week, Ethiopia began filling the reservoir behind its Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam for a second year. Ethiopia says the dam is crucial to its economic development and to provide power, but Egypt views it as a grave threat to its Nile water supplies. Sudan is also concerned about the dam's safety as well as its impact on the country's water stations. Emergency workers in Bangladesh have recovered 52 bodies from a burning food factory on the outskirts of the capital, Dhaka. Police say some 30 people were also injured after they jumped from upper floors as flames quickly engulfed the six-story building. Firefighters could rescue over two dozen people from the rooftop. Emergency services are still battling to put out the blaze on the fifth and sixth floors. The fire broke out on Thursday afternoon. Fire service officials say search and rescue operations will continue until the fire is brought under full control. A stockpile of highly inflammable chemicals is said to be the cause of the incident. This is the latest in a series of fires at industrial complexes and apartment buildings in Bangladesh. New coronavirus cases are on the rise in Iran as the country is witnessing another wave of the pandemic, largely due to the more contagious Delta variant. According to the latest figures provided by the health ministry, more than 16,000 people were infected by the virus in the past 24 hours. 146 people also lost their lives from the disease during the same period, pushing the overall death toll to more than 85,000. The ministry, meanwhile, said that over 6.6 million shots have so far been administered, and it intends to accelerate the pace of vaccination in the coming days. The number of infections and deaths has been on the rise since the Delta variant emerged in some of the southern Iranian provinces 2 weeks ago. And a new poll shows Brazilian people's disapproval rating of the country's president has reached an all-time high. According to the latest XP survey, 52% of Brazilians rate the government's performance bad or terrible. That's up from 50% in June. It's also the highest since Bolsonaro took office in January 2019. Moreover, 50% of participants expect this trend to continue for the remainder of the president's term. Bolsonaro's administration has been under fire over its handling of the coronavirus pandemic, as well as corruption allegations involving the purchase of COVID-19 vaccines. On Saturday, Brazilians took to the streets demanding the impeachment of the president and more vaccines to fight the coronavirus pandemic. Brazil faces the world's second deadliest outbreak after the U.S. And Haitian police say they've identified 28 people in connection with the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. According to the police, 26 of the suspects are Colombian, 2 others are Haitian-American. 17 of the suspects have already been arrested. The rest all Colombian remain at large. The Colombian Defense Ministry says initial findings suggest that several of the attackers have been retired members of the Colombian military. And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
It was deeply disquieting to learn that Great Britain, under the leadership of Trump clone Boris Johnson, is preparing to lift virtually all COVID safety strictures and leave the British people wide open to caprices of the virus, says William Rivers Pitt, journalist, in an article published under the heading "In echo of Trump, Boris Johnson says, UK must learn to live with rising COVID." Stay tuned for more. The United States is a divided nation. We have heard for many years, red state versus blue state, conservative versus liberal, Donald Trump, devotees versus basically everybody else. Rumbling fears of a future civil war have risen, due in large to violent, well-armed groups that have rallied to Trump's tattered banner. the sacking of the Capitol building by those groups 6 months ago to the day, and to police forces that seem to sympathize with him, even as murderers like Kyle Rittenhouse shoot peaceful protesters down in the street. If matters continue as they are, however, a bright new line will be drawn between two Americas, the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. Of course, these groupings don't fall entirely along ideological lines. Millions of people remain unvaccinated for reasons that have nothing to do with the politics of the last president. Some people with precarious employment, undocumented immigrants, and other marginalized groups face daunting barriers to receiving the shot, even if they want it. And others, including some black unvaccinated people, are legitimately wary after centuries of abuse at the hands of the medical industry. Children under 12 aren't yet eligible for the vaccine. For millions of others, however, the issue of vaccination comes down to straight policies. A solid majority of Republicans believe the 2020 election was stolen, and it is no quirk of statistics that most of the states with the lowest rates of vaccination are also the states that were carried out by Trump in the election. COVID has become part of the so-called culture war in the U.S., and refusing the vaccine amounts to an oath of fealty to the former president they incorrectly believe was robbed. The absurdity of this practically bends the light. COVID damn near killed Trump on the eve of the 2020 election, and both he and his wife were vaccinated the following January, yet it remains a dominant force not only in the politics of the nation, but its health as well. President Biden's plan to vaccinate 70% of the country by July 4th fell short, and a national effort is underway to reach those who have not yet gotten the shot. With the rise of the highly infectious Delta variant of COVID-19, the need for this is deeply pressing. Appearing on NBC's Meet the Press, leading COVID expert Anthony Fauci revealed that about 99.2% of current COVID-related deaths are taking place among the unvaccinated. The overwhelming proportion of people who get into trouble are unvaccinated, said Fauci, adding, which is the reason why we say this is really entirely avoidable and preventable. COVID-19 cases are rising sharply in several states, with low vaccine coverage fueled by the spread of the coronavirus more transmissible Delta variant, reports Sarah Zhang for The Atlantic, adding, in southwest Missouri, understaffed hospitals are already having to send COVID-19 patients hundreds of miles away. Indeed, Missouri has fast become a case study in how low vaccination levels can quickly spiral into another health catastrophe. For the first time since March, COVID hospitalizations in that state have gone over 900 a day for four straight days. Hospitals are again beginning to run out of life-preserving ventilators. Speaking directly to conservatives who refuse to participate in the vaccination process, West Virginia Republican Governor Jim Justice minced no words when he appeared on edition of This Week's on ABC. Red states probably have a lot of people that, you know, are very, very conservative in their thinking, and they think, well, I don't have to do that, but they're not thinking right. I hate to say this, but what will put them over the edge is an awful lot of people dying. The only way that's going to happen is a catastrophe that none of us want, and so we just got to keep trying, he said. This divide not only threatens the U.S., it was deeply disquieting to learn that Great Britain, under the leadership of Trump clone Boris Johnson, is preparing to lift virtually all COVID safety strictures and leave the British people wide open to the caprices of the virus. Learn to live with it is the new catchphrase coming out of 10 Downing Street, which is, you may recall, exactly the tack Trump wanted to take from the beginning, no matter the loss in lives, and it is a move fraught with peril. Johnson foresaw all clubs, museums, concert halls, theaters, and sports arenas to be allowed to operate without capacity limits or distancing measures, reports the Washington Post. This is far from the first time Johnson has lifted safety mandates, only to have COVID come barnstorming back in. The Delta variant is now the predominant strain of COVID in the UK, and that country is already witnessing what could be called the third wave of infections. 25,000 new cases a day, with England's chief medical officer Chris Whitty warning that number could balloon to 50,000 a day within 2 weeks. The U.S. witnessed a similar scenario last summer when warmer weather, pandemic exhaustion, and demands of capitalism inspired several states to throw a caution to the wind and reopen virtually everything. The end result of this was a fall and winter marred by horrific infection rates, the worst of any time during the crisis, and that was before the Delta variant emerged from India. Susan Michie, a psychologist and researcher at University College London and a member of Johnson government's SAGE Committee of Scientific Advisors, said of the learn to live with the virus concept, allowing community transmission to surge is like building new variant factories at a very fast rate. Rates of infection are continuing to increase, said Bobby Morton of Unite, one of the country's largest unions. And not only does mask wearing reduce transmissions, it helps provide reassurance to drivers, to passengers who are nervous about using public transport. The idea of personal responsibility and hoping that people will wear masks is absolutely ridiculous. Members are already reporting there is an increase in passengers ignoring the rules on mask wearing. Sounds all too familiar. The end game to this unfolding scenario, both in the US and in the UK, appears to be a separate one. In the fullness of time, some of those who have refused vaccinations may witness their communities being so thoroughly pummeled by the virus that they may finally acquiesce to getting the shot. By then, the death toll will have increased again, and in the meantime, COVID will keep receiving its most coveted gift, a lab of humanity to grow new variants, one of which may penetrate our vaccination shield and render the last 16 months of misery moot. We have to assume that's going to happen, says Ravindra Gupta, a clinical microbiologist at the University of Cambridge, adding the more infections are permitted, the more probable immune escape becomes.
We get people. Crushing voice of dissent.
The US government recently took down dozens of Iranian and regional websites, including the .com domain of global broadcaster Press TV. The move was made with no advance warning or explanation, with Washington not even immediately acknowledging that the so-called seizure had been engineered by them.
Increasingly, with the growth of alternative media and the wide attention it receives through the internet, social media, and similar means, this is being challenged in a way that we haven't really seen before.
It can't allow for alternative opinions to be out there, and it will strong arm and do whatever it takes to silence anyone who challenges their hegemony.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is identification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch gets Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen. The camera, the sword, by a Coke, by a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Mila Jabamadi, and in this episode, we take a look at the latest illegal move by the U.S. government, this time by targeting media outlets, challenging U.S. hegemony both inside the United States as well as thousands of miles away in West Asia. Stay with us.
What the U.S. did to Iranian websites was a breach of all principles of freedom of speech, which the United States is proud of. They restricted freedom of speech. We condemn this measure. We will use all our legal and international means to counter this wrong policy of the United States. It is not a constructive move at a time when nuclear talks are underway in Vienna.
Today, the domain has been seized, but the contents sitting on the servers have been untouched. Instead of pointing to the right place on the internet, the .com now points to an FBI warning instead. Yet Press TV's .ir domain works fine.
Viewers and readers of Press TV are mostly aware that the outlet frequently reports news purposely unreported by mainstream media. There's also the underreported, and these stories usually involve the rights of suppressed people, namely in Palestine and Yemen. We're now joined by investigative journalist based in Mexico City, Alex Rubenstein. Alex, thank you for joining the show.
Hi, Milad. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Alex, what do you think the seizure of the PressTV.com domain says about the U.S. crackdown on alternative media?
Well, I think it shows that the United States has total disregard for the principles that it was founded on, namely free speech and freedom of the press. It's clear that, you know, I talked to another host on Press TV recently about the U.S. seizure of $100 million worth of Iranian crude oil. And what that shows is that the United States wants to have global control over the world economy and trade. But in order to do that, they need to have global control over, you know, journalism in order to make sure that their narratives are not challenged, which Press TV was doing.
More than anything else, the seizure was similar to a hacking operation by black hat hackers. Rather than the official confiscation of a media outlet deemed illegal by the U.S. government. The .com domain of Press TV was blocked along with more than 30 other Iranian and regional websites that the U.S. government would rather not exist.
The superpower fundamentally exists on the idea of keeping the water murky and other nations in the dark. Reports critical of U.S. policies and measures are barely tolerated, and the government spares no efforts in promoting its one-sided sequence of events in favor of Washington and the Zionist lobby. Our next guest is Joe Catron, activist and commentator, as well as the U.S. coordinator for Samedon Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. As you know, Press TV has been accused of spreading disinformation. Where does Washington really stand on disinformation, and how much do they use the issue as an excuse to silence media outlets projecting the voice of dissent?
Well, Washington, D.C. is strongly in favor of disinformation and one of its most enthusiastic purveyors. On a single issue, which I follow closely, Palestine, the sheer amount of disinformation that comes out of the State Department and is typically, with some exceptions, repeated verbatim by our mainstream media is astounding. I mean, to cite one recurring example, how many times have we seen references to Israel retaliating against actions by the Palestinian resistance? There may have been a case once when some mainstream outlet reported on the resistance retaliating against Israeli aggression, which is almost always the case. But if so, I missed it. It's certainly not the normal pattern.
Very well. Many thanks for your insight, Joe Catron, activist and commentator. Stay with us for more.
The U.S. crackdown on alternative media is no surprise. The U.S. has been suppressing the voice of dissent for a long time, and the seizure of Press TV's website certainly fits into that picture. The latest round of censorship was directly aimed at not just Press TV, but the resistance movement against U.S. hegemony in the entire region. The bellicose measure was made as Tehran and Washington were engaged in indirect talks, trying to revive the 2015 nuclear accord, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
Well, I think this is the latest salvo in the information warfare that's been happening kind of around the world as states are seeing new ways to exert their foreign policy priorities through internet governance. And what we're seeing is with the seizure of the domain name system, you know, these websites, that the U.S. is trying to convey its power and its foreign policy priorities.
The United States' hunger for dominance on the social media and television is endless. The bellicose measure was made in part to ascertain that media coverage of the negotiations were politically in favor of the Biden administration, a Democratic administration that tries to portray the United States as a proponent of liberty and free speech.
Since its nascent day, Press TV has been speaking truth to power by exposing corruption and double policies in Washington. It's no surprise that the latest acts of aggression by the American government also has something to do with that.
As always, the Americans are pressing their negotiating parties to change course in favor of Washington's interests, something that Tehran has vehemently refused to accept. The seizure of PressTV.com seems like an attempt to make sure Iran's interests and U.S. dirty politics are not represented online.
As I said, the U.S. government sees the hegemony, which it's exercised up until now over information and its distribution, as a key asset in its overall aggression against many people around the world. Obviously, it doesn't want alternative sources of information spreading truth, which it would just as soon cover up. This is something that it sees as undercutting not only its media narrative, but also its broader material interests and its ability to dominate the world.
The United States is an old empire trying to have control over everything, including the political narrative cherry-picked and manipulated to its favor. Washington has long claimed to be a proponent of diverse voices, a claim that sits awkwardly alongside its brazen attempts to gag independent media outlets.
We cannot live in a vibrant democracy unless people get divergent sources of information and have the opportunity to hear a serious debate about the major issues facing our country. And when you have a smaller and smaller number of large media conglomerates owning and controlling what the American people see, hear, and read, you have a real threat to the kind of democracy that many of us want this country to be.
When it comes to media outlets critical of the system by reporting the truth, there seems to be no tolerance in Washington as it desperately moves to somehow crush the opposing ideas. Both the IRIB and the Iranian Foreign Ministry have condemned the move, vowing to come out with a stronger resolve in addressing the power play in America.
The people controlling our media have been fairly successful until now, not only because of their stranglehold on our traditional channels of information, what we call the blue chip media, the major television networks, newspapers, etc., but also the steps they've taken to discourage and prevent access to alternative sources, like Press TV and other Iranian and regional media, as well as outlets elsewhere in the world against which we've seen similar measures, if not quite comparable to these new ones.
The US has accused the websites of spreading disinformation, while in reality the monopoly it holds on media involves tampering with the truth. Media outlets controlled by the United States work based on profit.
When you look at who's on the boards of media corporations, they're also on the boards of U.S. oil companies, and they're on the boards of U.S. military contractors. So trying to study who owns America, you're really also, these are the people that own the media. We don't have a state media, but in some ways it's very much like a state media. It's the corporate state.
On the other hand, U.S. media outlets have never been as consolidated, so they tend to give their consumers what they want to hear and act in their interests of the umbrella corporations controlling them. The victims are Press TV and other anti-U.S. outlets such as Al Masira TV and Al Alam TV.
Well, the maintenance of this stranglehold on information, which the U.S. government and its loyal media and ultimately the ruling class which controls both, is to ultimately maintain the United States ruling class's interests in the world, their control over its people and resources, which many are fighting to resist in numerous regions, not just the Middle East, but in Latin America, across Africa. We see resistance spreading. And the U.S. government is fairly desperate to discourage people from considering what this means for them.
After all, the .com and .net addresses are generic domains not specific to any particular country. On the other hand, U.S.-owned social media such as Twitter and Facebook are amplifying disinformation and cracking down on freedom of speech.
The Islamic Republic is using all international and legal means to act accordingly in response to the provocative act of sabotage against independent media. But how much trust does US-controlled media really have among people in the United States, and what are the repercussions of not having access to the full truth for the people?
Yeah, well, just recently there was a poll of 46 countries that ranked trust in their domestic media. And of those 46 countries, the United States came last in terms of trust, with only 29% of people trusting the media. And, you know, this is deserved. As much as myself as a journalist would like it if people trusted people like me.
Great. Stay with us. We have more.
The U.S. and its allies in West Asia region are determined to maintain their media hegemony in the region in order to influence politics there. By joining forces with Israel and Saudi Arabia, the United States seeks to repress freedom of expression and control people's minds. U.S. support for its allies in information warfare is identical to its military support for real wars. The U.S. operation of the media is the same. Both inside the country and outside, people are the target of disinformation campaigns. The power-hungry politicians certainly don't want to highlight the atrocities carried out by their friends and allies.
I think that this seizure comes at a striking moment, considering the state of the current negotiations in Vienna. I think it's very clear to all of us, either that Joe Biden has no interest in returning to the nuclear agreement in any meaningful way, or that someone else in his administration is determined to stop him from doing so. Which of those is the case, I'm not sure. But one of them is clearly true. Beyond that, I think that the United States' aggressive actions against Iranian and regional media indicate its fear of different narratives and true facts
The pace of media takeovers by large national and multinational corporations has been increasing since the mid-20th century. Currently, six giant conglomerates control 90% of what media consumers read, watch, and listen to. General Electric, Viacom, Time Warner, CBS, News Corp, and Disney control a majority of American-owned media.
Together, these six empires, federations, alliances own about 90% of all media in the United States. In 1983, or the old Republic era, there were 50 companies owning that same share of media. So why is this important? Should you be worried? Well, it's not exactly a black and white issue.
Enormous media conglomerates have expanded their influence, leading to a shortage of meaningful content and alternative points of view. Trust in the mainstream news media is being steadily eroded.
The mainstream press in the United States lied the American public into the Iraq War. They've lied about every single major conflict that the United States has engaged in, basically forever. You know, Julian Assange, the great journalist Julian Assange, he has a quote where he says something along the lines of, if wars can be started by lies, then peace can be started by truth. But there's very little truth in the mainstream media, and that's reflected in this poll. And, you know, what it leads to is we have a situation in the United States where there's, like, all-out culture war. You know, people are very divided along partisan lines, and it's not going to get better. It's going to mean more violence in the streets, more distrust of authorities and the media, which to me is earned by them. But it's going to be an ugly situation, and it's only going to get worse.
Stereotype of an American surfing through television channels somehow captures the struggle for finding out the truth. But those high up want to stay in power, prepared to do whatever it takes to manipulate the discourse. It's not the first time that the United States has seized domain names of sites which actively expose the real intentions of the U.S. government and its moral bankruptcy.
I'm joined for this episode of We the People by Ben Norton. He is the assistant editor of The Gray Zone and the producer and co-host of the Moderate Rebels podcast. Ben, thanks so much for joining us. The seizure of Press TV's website by the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice on June 22nd sent shockwaves throughout the alternative media sphere, but this seems like the kind of development that could have major ramifications not only for outlets dedicated to challenging corporate media narratives, but also for just about everybody. So Ben, what can you tell us about what the U.S. government takeover of Press TV's page might mean for the average American viewer?
This is a pretty frightening development, and it's extremely hypocritical given the U.S. government justifies its foreign intervention in the internal affairs of many countries by claiming that those governments supposedly are violating press freedoms. We see a campaign right now against the elected government in Nicaragua claiming falsely that the Sandinista government violates press freedoms. We've, of course, seen so much propaganda against Russia, China, and many other countries. Meanwhile, the U.S. government is not only violating press freedom, it is actually stealing the property of foreign media outlets. And we're talking about dozens of foreign media outlets. Ironically, some of those foreign media outlets were, in fact, anti-Iran outlets. They were opposition outlets that pushed a U.S. government line. But that's, you know, the U.S. government at work. It doesn't really care if you're Iranian, if you're Yemeni, if you're from a country that the U.S. is targeting for regime change. They don't really distinguish civilians from the government. It's all just a war on the collective civilian population. And I have to say, as an independent journalist, as someone who helps to run an independent news website in the United States, it's very frightening for us because the U.S. government has essentially said to everyone in the entire world that the U.S. government controls all domain names that end in .com, .net, .org, and a variety of other names. So if the U.S. government doesn't like what we, as U.S. citizens, as journalists, independent journalists, are publishing about its crimes abroad, about its wars and regime change operations, then the U.S. government has effectively sent a warning out, a threat to journalists around the world saying that it reserves itself the so-called right to seize their journalism, to seize their property, because the U.S. says that supposedly it violates national security or whatever term they use to justify it. I mean, this is an egregious form of censorship targeting not only Iranian media and Yemeni media, but really media around the world, every single website that ends in .com, which happens to be a majority of websites on the internet.
Well, Ben, obviously there's a significant impact here, especially for people fighting back against and resisting these dominant government narratives coming out of the United States, coming out of the European Union, coming out of the global north more broadly. But what can you tell us about what all of this means for just the regular everyday viewer in the United States? You know, the people who have as their only alternative to press TV these same corporate media outlets that are out there currently.
The United States media is controlled almost entirely by five corporations, which dominate over 90% of the media, the news media in the United States. And all of those mainstream corporate outlets just echo the U.S. government line. We've seen it again and again, whether it's the so-called weapons of mass destruction they use to justify the illegal war in Iraq, or the claim by this young girl who ended up being the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador that Iraqi soldiers were taking babies out of incubators, or that Muammar Gaddafi in Libya was supposedly giving Viagra to his soldiers to rape women. All of those were blatant lies created by the U.S. government and then just spoon-fed to the media, which just did it, just spread the lie willingly without any, you know, need to be pressured. I mean, the media in the U.S. is one of the most servile propagandistic medias in the entire world, and the options for Americans to get access to alternative information shrinks every year. The U.S. government is trying to control everything. It's part of its strategy of so-called full-spectrum dominance. So the U.S. is waging war around the world, imposing sanctions on a quarter or a third of the global population, and at home, the U.S. government is trying to block all independent media outlets to have total control of people's lives. I mean, it really is the definition of authoritarianism.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank you so much, Ben, for breaking all of that down for us. We want to thank the viewers at home as well for tuning in. For Press TV's We the People in Washington, D.C., I'm Wyatt Reed. Take care.
The dot-com seizure has failed to weaken the morale of Press TV's website staff, and they keep working hard to make sure connections to their readers remain as strong as before. After all, those reading Press TV are fed up with lies superpowers want to feed them and seek truth despite all the noise on TV and social media. That was our show. Please join us again next week on another episode of We the People.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.